From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on the cover of the latest edition of New York Magazine. The image was a human skull trapped in a fossilized form, a look of anguish on its face. And here's the headline: The Uninhabitable Earth, Famine, Economic Collapse, A Sun That Cooks Us, What Climate Change Could Wreak Sooner Than You Think. End quote. As you might expect, this piece set off a wave of responses and a whole lot of scolding. The Washington Post declared that the piece was, quote, a case study in how not to communicate climate risk. Well, the author of that piece fired back, saying it's a sober look at worst-case scenarios, and those scenarios are plausible. So we can either grow up, or we can crank the AC and congratulate ourselves for not wanting to speak in terms that are too scary. He chose the former. In that spirit, many American cities and states are now considering climate action plans. And the city of Rochester has one now. It was the subject of a lot of debate over weeks and months. And today we've got the chance to discuss what that plan is, what it is not, what it aims to do. We invited Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren, as well as Ann Spaulding. You heard her on this program discussing it when it was in process. She's the city's energy and sustainability manager. They were not available, but with us in studio is Norman Jones. He's the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Services for the city of Rochester. Norman, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Also here from the Rochester People's Climate Coalition, Sue Hugh Smith. Sue, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much, Evan.
And Abby McHugh Griffa is not only with the People's Climate Coalition, she's co-leader of the Citizens Climate Lobby of Rochester. Abby, welcome back to the program as well.
Thanks for having us, Evan.
Norman, how is the city feeling about this now that you've got this, you know, you've gone through this process, you've got this document, it's more than 100 pages. You know, we're not going to read every line today, but we'll make sure our listeners are linked to it. But how's the city feeling about this now that you've gone through this process?
Well, it's a wonderful blueprint and guideline for how we should continue to be stewards and at the forefront of being environmentalists and making sure that we're doing the right things for our community and doing the right thing for our environment. So this is a great document, and it basically connects the dots for all the unique things that we're doing here in Rochester.
So if we look at American cities, from Portland, heading east, you know, I mentioned Portland. It gets a lot of credit as one of the early adopters of some ideas on how to sort of mitigate climate change. But if we look at the American cities that have tackled this, do you think Rochester will stand well in that crowd?
I think we're at the forefront. When you look at everything that we've done, not only from our solid waste management abilities, from our recycling that's totally comprehensive, from our multimodal transportation system, to our green fleet infrastructure, to our commitment to reducing our carbon footprint with goals in place for 2020, for 2030, and 2050. When you look at all the things that we've done over the last 30 years, you would say, yes, Rochester is at the forefront, and we're doing many great things. The one thing that we've been criticized for is not really tooting our own horns. We go from one initiative to the next initiative, make that work, make that happen.
Who is criticizing you for that?
People who don't know about it. I mean, it's basically, my friends here, Abby and Sue, they know all the things that we're doing. But at large, the general public, they don't know that we have a green fueling station and we have a green fleet, that we have over 485 vehicles that are alternative fuel. They don't know that we have 24 electric fueling stations. They don't know that we have natural gas street sweepers. They don't know that we have natural gas vans. They don't know that we're signatories to the Rochester People Climate Coalition. Should I go on?
Well, they know now. All right.
So there's so many things that we've done and been at the forefront. And this document and this blueprint basically helps us connect the dots for all the unique things that we're doing.
One of the things that I think our listeners will be wondering is when we talked about, you just heard Norman mention 2020, 2030, 2050, what are the actual goals? I'm just going to kind of read real briefly through that. And I say briefly, this is it's a long document with a lot of goals, but the broad outline is that the goal would be reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 20% from 2010 levels by 2020, reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 40% by 2030, and then by 2050, on track for an 80% reduction from that 2010 baseline. So it's 80% by 2050 goal. It's aspirational, but it's sort of accepted throughout the country as a level of reduction needed to stabilize the level of global atmospheric greenhouse gases. So we'll talk with Norman and our panel as we go throughout the hour about the individual steps and strategies to get there. I think there's six kind of core strategies, and within them, there's different things that the city would like to do. I want to ask Abby and Sue, first and foremost, if you felt like throughout this process, Abby, you know, were your voices heard? Did you feel like the city responded? Were you involved in the process?
Well, we definitely were involved in the process. We were members of the stakeholder advisory committee, and we attended, you know, several meetings where they were gathering input as the plan was being formulated. So we did have seats at the table for that. And then there was a public comment period after the draft had been released. And at that point, we were able to, you know, get it out to the community so it could be looked at more broadly, and people could provide feedback. During that period, I think the city was shocked, actually, how many people turned out to the public input session that they had. There were over 100 people, which apparently is rare. Usually those things are not well attended at all, although they do have free cookies, which we most appreciate. Yeah. So that was one opportunity. People had an opportunity to voice their concerns and or encouragement for the city. And we also were collecting postcards, which we were submitting to the city to both encourage them to pass the plan as it was, but also to maybe be a little bolder about it. And from what I understand, between when the draft was released and when the final document was released, there were some minor edits that were made. But no real substantive changes, which does on some level lead me to question the value of that public input process. But, you know, when you asked earlier, you know, is Rochester heading in the right direction? And I would say yes, absolutely. Rochester is heading in the right direction, has further to go, as do many, many, many cities around the country. But we are very glad that the progress that has been made is being made, and certain that we're going to continue moving in that direction.
Let me just ask you then directly, after the draft was released, then you get public comments, how many of your suggestions were adopted?
I think zero. But that's why, as we say, it's an aspirational document, and we aspire higher. Honestly, we aspire to go above and beyond what is in there.
What's an example of one suggestions you had that would have topped your list that you would have liked to see them adopt that they did not?
The transportation portion of the plan we felt was especially weak. The vanpools are good. Vanpools are great. But in terms of actually working with our public transportation system to get that just a little more user-friendly across the board, there's not really much in the plan about that. And then some actual regulation. There's not much in the plan that really has teeth. And, for example, Sue and I were talking just earlier. New York City has, banned oil.
Number
heating
six,
oil.
Heating oil.
And that those kind of steps, and it's actually been hugely impactful. Those properties ultimately, you know, there's going to be less pollution, but also they're going to save money in the long run. And being able to be forward about it enough to take those steps, I think eventually, and hopefully in the not too distant future, we're going to need to be there to achieve the goals just in the plan and more broadly, you know, where the science says we need to be.
All right. Sue, when you see the adoption of the plan versus the draft, do you think it goes far enough?
Well, you know, the coalition was advocating from the very beginning, and we were grateful to be included in that process, that the goals that were being set don't match the current science. You know, that's not to necessarily lay blame on the city or the consulting firms that are involved in drafting the plan, you know, from their taking a perspective of what's realistic, you know, what's possible to achieve, and we're coming at the issue from what's realistic in terms of human survival and necessity for the planet. So there is a challenge there. And the city is to be commended for trying to lay out a blueprint for success. And the Climate Action Plan is that. It's a plan, and its implementation will require much more than just the city on getting on board. And I think we're often, as citizens, quick to blame our governments for not doing enough without really taking a hard look at the funding issues around anything we want our cities or local governments to do. And you can't ignore the fact that the federal and the state governments are key players in that. We have unprecedented private wealth in a time where we keep saying, oh, we have to have public austerity. So is that really the sensible? How are we then going to fund all the work that needs to be done if the private sector doesn't step forward?
Okay, so you're asking us also to think about our own actions too. Sure, we can ask the government to do certain things, but we can also ask what we're doing ourselves.
Well, the government can and must lead, and I think in this case the city of Rochester is trying to do that. But implementing the plan, the city isn't going to have the money, the resources to do everything that has to be done on their own. There's a lot of privately owned buildings. The busing system isn't owned by the city mm-hmm. of Rochester. Yep. So it's extremely complicated, and I think we should continue to push our leaders, and we will continue to push our leaders.
Oh, Norman knows you will.
He does. But there are some really strong advocates within city government that are trying to achieve very ambitious goals.
Okay, so Norman, so let me just start with this. And we're going to get to your phone calls, listeners. I see the phone starting to ring. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You had the draft plan, then you had public comment, and you've got people who are working on this from a citizens' climate lobby perspective. This is the passion of their lives. And they're saying they respect you, they want to work with you, but not a single one of their suggestions was taken up. Why not?
Let's put it in context and understand the authority that we have and the authority we don't have. Abby made a reference to transportation. The city of Rochester does not have the authority over the Regional Transit Authority. That's something that the Regional Transit Authority has to do. However, we have a very vibrant Complete Streets program. We encourage multimodal transportation. We have over 100 lane miles of bike shares or bike boulevards within our city. I don't know if you know if you notice that there's Zagster stations that are going up. There's over 340 bicycles where we're encouraging bicycles community. We are putting in more pedestrian friendly systems where we're making the city more walkable. We just made another extension, or we have plans for extending the El Camino Trail. So from a transportation standpoint, multimodal transportation standpoint, we're clicking off all the boxes that we need to do to make sure that we're on point to be a leader in making sure that we're providing leadership in that role.
So is Abby just unrealistic about what she wants?
No, I'm not saying she's unrealistic. I think she doesn't understand the role of government and who does what. You're asking us to have authority over the Rochester Regional Transportation Authority, which is under the authority of the federal government. We're city government. It doesn't go from the city to the federal government. So you made a recommendation on something that we really could not influence. So we can make that stipulation saying, guess what? If you can you do this? And I'm sure they would. Just earlier today, we had an electric vehicle that came in that was at City Hall that the mayor rode in and all of our transportation staff rode in, and we looked at that. My fleet services team came out. They looked at the vehicle. We're looking at different types of ways of providing alternative fuel vehicles for our fleet, natural gas, electric, electric fueling stations. So I think, you know, when you're making these statements saying that your comments aren't being heard or it's not being reflected in the plan, you have to really look at what we're doing and take an inventory of what we're doing and how we're, you know, making sure that we're at the forefront. And Sue is right. You know, we do have budgets and we do have constraints from a financial standpoint, but we have been able to make good business decisions that are in line with the environment and how we proceed. So I challenge anyone in the state, you know, that a comparable size city that has over 480 alternative fuel vehicles. And I challenge anyone to just tell me that they have over 100 lane miles of bicycles, bicycle lane miles in the city. We have permeable pavements. I can go on and on and on. So I think, you know, that the things that we have influence over, we are doing it.
So definitely point taken on transportation. Bad example, and I shouldn't have brought that one up. I would say there are others.
All right, so what are some other suggestions you think that maybe would have been more realistic for the city to grab onto and they did not?
Well, so specifically, they've proposed in the Climate Action Plan a voluntary benchmarking program for commercial buildings. This is another example of where, you know, other cities have implemented, you know, definitely specifically New York City, a mandatory benchmarking program, just meaning that at the time of sale, it's required that an energy audit be done and it be clear to the buyer what they're buying, so that then properties of similar size can be compared and the buyer can make the best decision. And
this would be helpful for renters as well, because, you know, we get into situations where, unfortunately, people rent a space they think's affordable, then their heating and energy costs skyrocket, and they're faced with either paying the rent or paying the utilities, and then they end up having to leave that property. So it creates instability. So having a metrics that is uniform would be helpful for tenants. It could serve as an incentive for the property owners to upgrade, because there would be knowledge that people would have to choose from different properties.
And that was one of our specific suggestions at the time when the draft of the cap was out, that it be, rather than a voluntary program, let's make it a mandatory program. And, you know, probably phased in over a number of years so people could make those adjustments. But I think there's, you know, and again, don't get me wrong, we are 100% aware of and supportive of everything the city has already done, especially, you know, their own municipal operations. They've done enormously good work just to make better choices, sustainable choices internally. I think going the next step to require that others do the same.
Add teeth, as you say.
Add teeth. Yes, okay. Adding teeth. So that would be one example.
All right. So let me ask Norman to respond to that. Why not add teeth in the way that they described, in the way they say other cities such as New York City have on this issue?
Well, let's compare oranges to oranges, mm-hmm. apples to apples. Don't compare Rochester to the Big Apple. I mean, it's not.
They're both cities.
It's not a true comparison, Evan. New York City is over 8 million. They have a tax base that's huge, and their opportunities. We're, you know, 209,000. The comparisons, they're different. However, there's, you know, to Abby's concern, there is something called the New York State Building Code that has certain conditions that are in place that meet the energy code standards. And if we're going to do anything along those lines, we have to first be part of that building code system and structure. So for us to, we can't supersede a New York State law that's already in place in regards to standards that are in place. So that's why we put it in there as voluntary. So there's actually codes that are in place that we also have to abide by. Now, there's certain things that we have done that we can do that's in our ability to do in regards to, you know, let's look at recycling, for example. A comprehensive citywide recycling, containerized, multi-stream, where we're looking at not only expanding it and making it easier for people to recycle, but also looking at other unique ways of doing it. You know, having a fleet that's not on your street every week, but every other week, because we gave you a bigger container. Not only does that make it easier for you to recycle, but there's less diesel fuel being burnt because we're only on your street every 2 weeks. So those are the types of things, when you look at these plans, that, you know, let's get the things that bring it to the forefront that we can basically make a savings on and change some behaviors and bring people into it and have voluntary acceptance. Because when people do this on a voluntary basis, you have better compliance. If we make it statutory and we say, guess what, you need to do this or we're going to penalize you, we'll spend more time doing the actual enforcement part than the actual education. I was the city's recycling coordinator in 1988 when we started the city's program. So I have a very long history in the solid waste management field and the environmental field. And we found that it was better for us to go out there from a voluntary standpoint and encourage people and educate them than saying, guess what, if you don't do it, this is going to happen. So our stance has always been to educate and let them know and prick their conscience and saying, this is how you do the right thing. You know, no one has forced Sue or Abby to come up here and do it because, you know, the law is telling you to do it. You're doing it because it's the right thing to do. And it should be our job to just let people know this is the right thing to do because we all live on this planet. So I understand that you want us to have more teeth, but I've learned over the 30 years that I've been involved in this that if I can get you to do it from a voluntary standpoint, I'm going to get better compliance. And we must start not with the adults that we're going to sanction, but with the children in the school.
Abby, that work for you?
You know, I think it's a good point. It's definitely a valid point. People, no one likes being told what to do. I think we're at a difficult time in history, though. You know, the scale of this issue, first of all, a lot of people just really don't understand the crisis, the magnitude of the crisis we face. And as you mentioned in that article from the New York Magazine, people are reluctant to talk about it. And even from our own perspective, you know, we struggle with this. Education is a major component of the Climate Action Plan. And what is the best approach to helping people to appreciate that there is real urgency here, that we cannot delay without scaring them so that they just want to, you know, stick their head in the sand and do nothing? This is a, you know, researchers are trying to work this out. What is the best way to communicate about climate change? And definitely there's evidence out there that scaring people is not necessarily effective. But as you mentioned earlier, maybe this was before we were on the air, but at some point we need to all face reality on this issue. Right. And this is not going to be easy. I mean, no one says it's going to be easy, but the consequences of not acting boldly now, we will regret it later. I think there's no doubt from a scientific perspective about that. It's worth taking the hard steps now, even if there is pushback, even if there is resistance, which there is likely to be, because it will be easier now than later.
Well, there's a time at which we pass a point of no return, right? And the people who argue, oh, don't scare people. People who argue don't scare people also are people who haven't necessarily been following this since the late 80s, like I have, when Dr. James Hansen first said, look, we are measuring human-caused changes to our climate and we need to act. And here we are, 25 some years later, over 400 parts per million in carbon dioxide, which is way above anything that humans have ever seen, way above the levels under which mammals have thrived previously on this planet. And to not get people to understand the urgency is really problematic, because if we do nothing, we will pass tipping points. And for me, Evan, the scariest article that I read in the last couple of weeks actually wasn't this one that you referenced, but one in the Times where, you know, carbon emissions have leveled in the last 3 years globally, and yet carbon levels in the atmosphere have continued to rise. And so are we already creeping up on that tipping point?
Okay. In a moment, we're going to get our only break of the hour, and I see the phone ringing, and I want to get some of your calls and feedback as we get into our second half hour. And that's a new call, by the way, guys. So let me at least just say, I think what I'm seeing, or at least what I'm hearing between Norma and what Norman and what Abby and Sue are saying is this. Norman is saying, number one, we want people to improve and change behaviors. We want people to do better. And he thinks the most effective way is not hitting it with sort of a government hammer. It's educating. It's working with people. It's bringing them in to understand the impact of their actions and starting that way as opposed to being overly penal about it. I also heard Norman saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that you might not have all of that much room to actually enforce anyway. Is that incorrect or is that correct?
That's incorrect.
Okay, so you could add more teeth if you wanted to.
We have guidelines. We have things in place. I talked about the energy code earlier. No, that's something that's enforceable. Every new building that comes in, everything that we do from a construction standpoint, and that's across the board, government and commercial, they have to meet the New York State Building Code, which has a part called the energy code in it. So that's there. You know, we do have TEEF. We have a mandatory recycling program. We have emission standards.
And you can hit people harder for not following if you wanted to.
That's state, local, federal. Everyone has these things in place.
But you're worried about the tax base. You said New York City is not Rochester. Rochester cannot afford to be chasing people up.
I'm not worried about I'm not saying it's the tax base. What I'm saying is that we have a better compliance when we educate people and we bring them all into it and we partner with them. Going back to the 80s, what made recycling prevalent and everyone wanted to really get involved with recycling was the story of the barge that left Staten Island and had no place to go. That's what brought recycling to the forefront. There wasn't this big hue and cry out saying that there's no place for the garbage to go. They had this story of the barge, and that's when recycling became at the forefront. And we changed a whole generation. You know, recycling is now a household term.
Definitely.
And it wasn't it's a mandatory recycling law. However, it's something that we haven't really been out there with recycling police and finding people enforcing that law. We've been educating people on that. And Evan, what I'm saying is that as partners, we can educate people and bring people to the table by letting them know this is what's going on. And when Sue talks about, you know, the actual impacts on the climate, and if we can break it down to a level where everyone understands that, guess what, this is what's really happening to our environment, and they understand that, and they see the impact and what's going on with asthma and different things that are impacting certain elements of our society, that's how we're going to change this. Now, it's great to have these laws in place, but I think it's important that we have a plan, that we have partners, that we can go out with the same message where we're going to take these steps to help change this. The first thing I'd like to say is, guess what, City of Rochester, we think this was bold of you to go out there and put together a Rochester Climate Action Plan after you did your greenhouse gas inventory, after you did your citywide mandatory recycling, after you put up your green fueling station, you know, and we applaud you for doing that. And how can we help you do more? So when you talk about these mandatory things that are happening, there's things that are mandatory and statutory that are going on that we're doing right now. Right now, there's e-waste. We don't collect e-waste from your curbside anymore. If you put it out, you're going to get cited. You're going to get a fine, and we're not going to collect it. But we're going to give you an e-waste collection day that the Rochester People's Climate Coalition partnered with us on. So those are the things that I'm talking about. So I'm not saying that, no, we won't enforce. We must enforce. But how we enforce, it must be very strategic. It must be tactful. And we must get, you know, something out of it more so than if we choose the route of education. Yeah. Education is the key.
Okay, now, and again, I want to make sure I'm understanding everything here. So I think what I'm hearing, the difference on the other side of the table, is Abby and Sue saying, yes, educate, yes, bring more people into the fold, help them understand the consequences, hope that changes behavior. But we're not at a point where we can be like, well, let's just educate and hopefully everyone will get on board. It's kind of too late that yes, educate, But we're reaching a point on this planet where it's too late just to say, well, we tried to educate and, you know, we didn't want to hit people too hard. It comes a point where you say, we have to make a values choice
right.
and have to lead by government and mm-hmm. there have to be tough consequences for people who don't get on board because we're, is that?
Absolutely. I mean, I absolutely agree and do commend the city for what they're doing. It's fantastic. The New York State building codes, quite frankly, are not good enough. And that's like the most minimum standard that you can meet on a building is the New York State building codes, even though they are currently updating them. Okay, so, but we need to bring into the conversation are the builders, and the builders need to be educated on this. The coalition has been forming a team to work on implementation with the city on the building efficiency portion. That's just getting started and off the ground. The city's moving forward, looking at community choice aggregation, which is another part in the implementation plan. The Village of Lima just voted on Tuesday to have community choice aggregation. They are now waiting for other municipalities to step forward so that we can get a large enough group to make it viable. So that's exciting, and I know the city of Rochester is looking at that internally, and we hope that they will move on that in the near future.
Can you define community choice aggregation?
Sure. Community choice aggregation, on its simplest form, is like a buying club where we would be able to select the source of our energy, so we would be looking at a carbon-free and a renewable option, and then we would be able to dictate the terms of that contract, the pricing, so that it would be less than the utility rate of the last year, and fixed pricing, so people know from month to month to month what the electric rate would be. And so it's a way to begin to shift entire communities to renewable energy. That's our goal. It's happening in Westchester County. 14 communities there are 100% renewable energy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Community choice aggregation coming our way here?
We are evaluating the proposals or potential proposals, but first thing that has to happen, it has to be a local law. And as we look at the Westchester's local law, we will move forward after we make a decision on how to create our law. Mm-hmm. So, and we've met with RPCC,
yep.
and they've been mm-hmm. advocates of it, and we're looking at it.
The city's doing their due diligence, and we're just very excited that the Village of Lima has already stepped forward this week.
Okay, so interesting conversation. We're going to get our only break of the hour and come back to your phone calls. Frank and John on the phones, we're coming to you. We have some emails. Fritz wanted to know more about recycling. I think Norman can help with that, including some questions on composting and other things. So you're smiling. Okay, let's get that break. We'll come right back right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on the next Connections, in our first hour, a new local report on police accountability has a lot of people thinking about how to review conduct. We'll talk about civilian review and possible changes. Then in our second hour, mental health at work. The CEO from a company, well, his response went viral when he told an employee, take time for yourself. He says that shouldn't be unusual. We'll talk about it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The city of Rochester has a climate action plan, and that's news. Not every city does, certainly. They've gone through this process of trying to create a plan to move the city toward a reduction in emissions by about 80% by 2050. Now, that's aspirational. But if you take what the city was doing in 2010, and then they want to get to a reduction of, Norman, 10%, 20% by 2020, by 2030, 40%, and then by 2050, maybe even an 80% reduction. They've got six different strategies that really break down in very specific ways, and you can read all about that. We're going to link to you both on the podcast page, our social media sites, et cetera. Use Twitter and other ways to get it if you want to read the city's climate action plan. Norman Jones is a commissioner of the Department of Environmental Services for the city of Rochester. Abby McHugh-Griffa and Sue Hughes-Smith are members of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition, and we're talking about that plan. And I want to get some of your questions in as well. So let me grab Frank in Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, Frank.
Yes, Evan, I really thank you for doing this program. The media hasn't really been getting the message out that this was passed by City Council on May 23rd. I think you're the only one. I have a comment about the Climate Action Plan. Also,
sure.
A question for the commission. The one, I think, the statement at the beginning of the climate action plan by the mayor is a very powerful statement about the urgency of addressing climate.
Oh, man, we've lost Frank again. Poor Frank has been waited. And, Frank, so do me this favor here. I'm going to cut this call. Frank, come back. We will come back to that. And so just pause that thought and bring it back here, Frank. And now I'll go to John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Oh, hi. I want to congratulate the city on its forward thinking. Excellent, excellent, excellent. I personally believe that until we as a humanity, all humanity, implement what I call a universal front-end environmental damage deposit on all human activity, we as a humanity will not be able to adequately address the effects that are happening in our planet due to climate change. I would urge the city to start having all third grade classes in the city come up with a rap for that. UFEEDD, Universal Front-End Environmental Damage Deposit. But what they're doing is an excellent step. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Can I comment on
that? Yeah, go ahead. Thank you, John.
John, thank you. Right now, we were working with the science curriculum department for the Rochester City School District on a module for recycling, solid waste management, and the environment. I have a draft of that, and the school district has been a great partner along those lines. And I agree, we have to get them early, and that's where we must change. And sometimes, most times, it's the children that lead the adults in this area. I learned it back 30 years ago when we came up with the model, don't trash our future, recycle, and now it's a household. And if we can change, you know, the mindset of the adults to the children, it can be a very effective tool.
Some thoughts over there from you guys there?
Absolutely true. There's research out there that for many people, their primary source of information about climate change is their children. So no doubt about it. Partnering with the schools would be a great step.
Isn't that remarkable? Back to the phones we go. Karen in Henrietta. Go ahead, Karen.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm one of the ones that has been very sparse in attending the climate lobby. And I'd like to hear from Abby just some ideas that people can do to volunteer on behalf of climate change. In and around Rochester. I mean, Trump has me really, really now wanting to push for action. So I'll let Abby take this call.
All right, Karen, thank you. Main question is how to get more involved, how to volunteer, how to get involved.
Sure, Karen. Great. Thank you. The Rochester People's Climate Coalition actually now has a Help Wanted page on our website. And there are lots of skill sets we need. So you can check that out. Citizens Climate Lobby, our local Citizens Climate Lobby chapter is particularly strong. Again, you can find information on the web about that. Just go to citizensclimatelobby.org. And that's, you know, if you're concerned about Trump in particularly, working on federal legislation, which we need, absolutely, might be the right avenue for you. And of course, just feel free to reach out to me if you want to have, you know, a deeper conversation, because there are many organizations in town doing wonderful work. Each has a different flavor and is coming at this from a different angle. So, you know, and the Rochester People's Climate Coalition, as sort of the hub of, you know, where all these groups come together, we are in a position to help direct people to an organization that would be a good fit for them personally. But I'd say, you know, it's just taking that first step. You just, you know, you show up at your first meeting, you start talking to people, you ask questions. That's really how I got started. I just, you know, I felt a real sense of urgency around this issue and that I needed to do something. And you know what? Doing something is by far and away the best antidote to depression, because otherwise it is overwhelming. It is really, really hard to take. But if you're doing what you can, it's deeply satisfying. You'll meet very cool people, and there are a lot of ways to get involved. So Rochester People's Climate Coalition, our website, Citizens Climate on my website, or just, you know, call me, email me.
Abby at
ROCPCC.com.
we got Frank back. Go ahead, Frank.
Sorry, I think I have a bad phone connection. I just want to finally say that the CAP is really tailored to climate change impacts and solutions in our area. And I had a question for the commissioner. Does the city have plans to increase communication to the public about the CAP, about the climate action plan? For example, outreach programs for neighborhood associations and other groups. are they going to take a more active push to get the plan out? It's a marvelous plan. It's really well written. And one sneaky question, is Monroe County finally going to get on board with the climate, taking care of climate adaptation in our area? This has just been a city effort and nothing from the county. Thank you.
Yeah, Frank, thank you very much. I can't speak for the county. I have no idea. Abby and Sue, any reason to believe the county is going to be getting on board with something like this?
We would love to have conversations with the county.
That's a no. Norman.
I can speak for the city. We are encouraged by those types of phone calls, but we are out to every community group that will have us. The Rochester Music Fest that's taking place today and tomorrow. It was going to be at Genesee Valley Park, but now it's going to be at the War Memorial because of the weather conditions. We have an actual booth or table set up there where members of my staff have volunteered their time to be there to talk about the Climate Action Plan and our sustainability efforts and everything green from our recycling. So we've learned that we must be out there and be the actual cheerleaders, the standard bearers for this to make sure that people, if they have questions about what to do or how to recycle or how do I get a container, what should go in there or what are you guys doing? We need to be out there. So every time we have a chance, so it's an RB event tonight at the War Memorial, and my folks are going to be there, and they'll be there tomorrow. So we're out there at the forefront. We want to get this message out there, and we need partners like RPCC to be out there with us, sending out that same message about, guess what, we're in this together, and global warming does not discriminate. It impacts all of us equally.
Fritz says, can your guest speak to composting initiatives in the city of Rochester, public and private? Any composting?
Well, Fritz, you must be reading my mind, or you must have my office bug, because I was speaking with Ann Spalding earlier today about that. We do have some ideas what's going on with some organic composting of household waste. Currently, we do have composting efforts for all of our loose leaves. We collect loose leaves and we compost about 30,000 cubic yards each year. That material is processed and turned around and given back to the public at our Materials Give Back program. That's been going on for about 25 years. That's at Colfax and Ferrano Street. So we have composting of leaves, but we're really investigating the opportunity to do more household waste. And we have some really unique ideas that we will share at a later date.
Mm-hmm. And composting is in the Climate Action Plan as a recommended action. So we are eager for that to roll out, and yeah, so grateful that the city's working on that.
And we look forward to seeing it on a large scale. There is a small company that does some composting, community composting, if the caller's interested in that. And if you are someone who has events, there's also a company called Impact Earth that does zero waste events.
Yep, and we had them on the program just a couple of months ago. By the way, Sue, I didn't mean to be uncharitable to Monroe County. I'm just reading in your answer. You'd love to work with anybody who wants to create a climate action plan, but it doesn't sound like Monroe County is
in process. We've had a couple attempts to reach our county executive's office and have not yet secured a meeting with them,
okay,
but we
so
would
it
really,
is a, it is
truly
a,
love to work with them.
Okay, so it is a no.
So,
I was right.
But Evan, I just have to say this for the county. Now, the county does have a solid waste master plan. Mm-hmm. They've been partners with us with our recycling efforts. They operate the materials recycling center. So they do have some things in place, mm-hmm, but in regards to the climate action plan,
yeah,
I think maybe we just got a little bit in front of them, but they have been stalwarts in dealing with the solid waste management area.
And there were some county folks at your stakeholder meeting for the city's climate action plan, which I thought was really nice. So we do look forward to having some conversations with them when they have some time.
Sure. And I think part of our role is just educating people on what these climate action plans are. Mm-hmm. The city of Rochester, Norman's right, maybe could get more credit, but part of our goal is not just to give credit for having a plan, but to ask if it's any good.
Yeah.
And because And that's part of the goal, right? And that's what we're working through. And that's why I'm glad Norman not only is here this hour, the city has answered the call every time we've wanted to talk about it on this program. And I know they've been working with stakeholders, and the goal is to have good, strong plans.
Well, Evan, and you're right about the county. What makes Portland's climate action plan so strong is that they have partnered directly with the county in its formation. So it's both the city and the county.
So maybe we'll see. Maybe Norman's right. The city's out ahead here, but maybe we'll see Monroe County sort of follow that lead, and we will certainly report on it if that happens. Robert in Fairport is next on the phone. Go ahead, Robert.
Thanks for taking my call. Earlier in the conversation, it was mentioned that the city of Rochester had like 400 vehicles or something like that that run on natural gas. There's a stat out there that, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, about 67% of all domestically produced natural gas is fracked. It comes from fracking. And I'm kind of curious if the city also has a policy toward the use of fracked natural gas, or the city has an official policy on fracking.
Robert, thank you for that. Norman.
First, I just want to make sure that you heard me correctly, Robert.
Yeah.
I said there's over 480 alternative fuel vehicles in the city fleet, and that's made up of electric vehicles, natural gas vehicles, hybrid vehicles, E85 vehicles. So it's a whole variety of vehicles. And a portion of those vehicles are natural gas. The city council has a anti-fracking ordinance. We didn't dig down deep to find out where the actual origin of the natural gas we receive, where it comes from. That's a question for the utility that we purchase our natural gas from. That's from RG&E. So if we really want to dig down that deep and do that type of dive, you would probably want to contact RG&E and see where they're purchasing their gas from. I believe that they're probably getting their gas from the Henry Hub, which is a place in Louisiana where the gas is actually drilled and it's carried this way through pipelines, but it's stored in different locations throughout the country. So I think most of the gas that's coming here is coming from the Henry Hub that's part of the drilling operation in Louisiana. So, but that's a question for Louisiana. But for the record, we have over 480 alternative fuel vehicles, not 480 natural gas vehicles.
Can I just try to squeeze in one more phone call and then a couple of questions that will wrap the hours? We're talking about the City of Rochester's Climate Action Plan. D in Rochester next. Go ahead, D.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call. I've had a question about textile recycling, some stuff that cannot be donated to the thrift stores because they're stained or ripped, and I don't put anything in the garbage. I actually have bags of, really damaged material. And I was wondering, because I keep hearing, we should keep it out of the landfills, but there's no options in this city.
Well, you cannot place that into our blue recycling container at this time. That's something that I'm making a note to myself on, textiles. Years ago, there used to be a market for those things when basically there were rags when back in the 50s and 60s. But right now, I don't know of any market, but I will look into it and see if that's something that could be developed.
All right. I wanted to ask Norman Jones if the city of Rochester is actively looking at Paris in the same way that states have. Governor Cuomo's talked about it. Is part of this saying we were going to develop a climate action plan no matter what the Trump administration did with Paris, but is part of this with an eye on Paris, understanding those parameters and saying we've got to meet that here now?
This is part of us doing business. This is what good governments do. This climate action plan was in the planning stages and development stages in 2014, 2015. This is before we even thought of a change in the administration going in this direction. This is the natural progression from what we've been doing. The first thing we did was our greenhouse gas inventory. Let's look at our greenhouse gas and see where we're at. What can we do as a municipality? And the first thing that we have to do is do a self-assessment. So we did our greenhouse gas inventory. We looked at what we have and then making certain steps based on that to change our carbon footprint. Then we decided that, as a as a municipality, we should look at the greater Rochester area. This is not just for the city of Rochester, but this is the area, the whole city of Rochester, not just for the city buildings, but all of the city of Rochester, and provide them a blueprint. So this was being done before the administration change. This was part of our business plan of how we were going to do. And the other thing that people don't realize is that part of candidate Warren, when she was running for office as mayor, this was on her platform, to make sure that we had an Office of Sustainability and that we made sure that we were at the forefront for all things green and all things that are sustainable. So this, not only was this something that she campaigned on, but it's also something that we've done before the administration changed.
And listeners, we're going to post for you the plan down to our last minute. Go ahead, Sue.
Two things. I know Norman and certainly Ann Spaulding certainly understand that action on climate has other co-benefits for people who live in the city, and that needs to really be emphasized. If we want a better place to live, a healthier place to live, then we act on climate. Other thing is, there will be a mayoral primary forum August 30th, hosted by ourselves and the League of Women Voters, location to be determined, but specifically looking at climate and the climate action plan's implementation.
All right, Abby, some final thoughts from you as we move forward now that the city has a climate action plan, about 30 seconds.
Again, so grateful that they've put this plan in place, really looking forward to being part of its implementation and having just the community more broadly rally around this, because we need everyone in on this. It's all hands on deck at this point.
Okay. So. Are you an optimist?
Depends on the day, Evan.
Yeah, I hear
it
that.
It depends on the day. But today, sure. Yeah, because we're here. Because we're here talking about it on the radio.
Well, I want to thank Abby and Sue from the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. Again, to contact them online where?
ROCPCC.com. Yep, and send me an email anytime. Abby@ROCPCC.com.
And the City of Rochester's plan now in place for you to check out, and we'll make sure we post that in various places as well. I want to thank Norman Jones, who is the Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Services for the City of Rochester, being here, engaging, answering our questions, and helping us understand the plan going forward. Norman, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And by the way, every time I say composting, our email blows up. So if you guys change anything, let us know, because our listeners want to know.
Well, stay tuned.
Okay, there you go. It's composting and parking. It's amazing the feedback we get on those issues. Been a great week here. Our thanks to John Andrus, the engineer today. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. If you missed anything, join our Weekend Connections podcast, which we'll have up this afternoon. Otherwise, we're right back with you Monday afternoon on member-supported public radio.